on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello and welcome in Brewers Weekly taped edition. Happy All-Star break, everybody. This is the end of it tonight. I'm Dom Catronio. Our nightmare is over. These last 2 days without baseball, it's all back. The sprint is on. The Brewers are in the race. What more could you ask for? This is a taped edition, so enjoy my last night of the All-Star break here. Hope you can forgive me. But if you are listening live here on the program, don't worry. You can actually catch these in podcast form, too. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts, and you can enjoy the exact same content you find. So, unfortunately, I'm not able to interact with you tonight here over the phone or over text or anything sort of that, but we just got to make sure we keep the misses happy, right? So, we got to enjoy this last day of the All-Star break, survive, move on, and get ready to go for the Dodgers this week. And we'll talk about them at the very, very end of the program. We got a lot to talk about with the reaction to Jacob Mizorowski, of course, getting into the All-Star game. We also got to talk about the first half and look ahead to the second half. I got three keys for the second half of what the Brewers need to continue to do and to make sure that they can try to track down the Cubs for this Central Division, but if not, make sure they remain in prime wild card real estate. Also, quick recap of the draft. We have audio from the top two selections by the Brewers, Brady Ebel and Andrew Fisher, the first pick by the Brewers, 20th overall. We'll hear from them a little bit later on in the show. But let's get things started with the All-Star recap in this one. Three Brewers were sent to Atlanta to participate in the All-Star game. Of course, Freddie Peralta did not pitch in the game since he pitched on Sunday and pitched very well against the Washington Nationals. But the Brewers had Trevor Megill get into the game, pitch a scoreless seventh, in fact, get a hold. Keep that in mind for the Brewers if we talk about that. Four pitches only for Trevor Megill. Got the job done. Got Stephen Kwan to ground out to end the inning in the seventh. And this is when the American League was starting to form a little bit of a rally. So it was actually a very stressful part of the game for Jacob Mizorowski to then enter for the eighth inning. And he had two strikes on all four batters he faced. He allowed one hit. Hey, this is the All-Stars. He's the best of the best for a reason. He allows a base hit, but he did not allow a run. He did his job. He topped out at 102.3. He unleashed one slider at 98 miles an hour, and that was when Fox showed the reactions of both dugouts of the guys smiling, which was kind of how we look up in the press box whenever he throws something that disgusting and that hard for his year. So congratulations to Jacob Mizorowski. We'll get into some of the reaction about all that in the next segment of why people are bitter or why people are mad or what I'm calling fake outrage. But the point being, the Brewers two representatives showed off why the Brewers pitching development continues to churn. And Trevor Megill was asked about it in the media day, the day before, of course, where all the guys are kind of fair game. Anybody can go up to them at the convention center and say, hey, why is it working with the Brewers? And he said the same thing he told us. We aired that a couple episodes ago on Brewers Weekly about the front office understanding you need to have the coaches dumb it down a little bit. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Megill's intelligence, but what I'm trying to say is Jim Henderson and Chris Hook and the entire pitching development staff, they can take those numbers from, you know, the nerds, if you will, like me, in the front office and say, we need him to do the X, Y, and Z. But you then translate that into pitching sense. And that's where Hookie and Jim come in. And that's what Trevor Megill continues to give praise for, where the message is never lost, and it's also never like beat over your head with it, where it's like, you need to do this and increase your vert and do this. And been like, well, how do I do that? So I think the Brewers have found that formula. And obviously, when you draft and develop talent like Jacob Mizorowski or go and acquire talent like Freddie Peralta when he was a teenager, and when you're able to claim Trevor Megill off the trash heap from two different organizations who didn't see him as valuable and then make him an all-star closer, you're doing something right. Then finally on Freddie Peralta here, to recap the All-Star game from the Brewers' perspective, obviously he wasn't pitching in the game, but one of the coolest things that Major League Baseball does in all of these jewel events, as they call them, their biggest events of the year, their main philanthropic cancer research arm is called Stand Up to Cancer. And it's a really powerful moment if you've ever been in attendance for one of these things where everybody gets a card to write who you stand up to cancer for. It's meant to be fundraising, not just to a singular form and research of cancer, but this is a fund that helps all sorts of research centers in order to do more research to get rid of this awful disease that has impacted every single one of our lives. And I didn't expect to get choked up when I saw, you know, as they go through the cuts of the whole field and show a bunch of people, show the broadcast talent who they're standing up for, the players all stand out in front of the dugout, and Freddie Peralta, I stand up for Bob Uecker. And that was a really, really cool moment. Somebody who gets it, obviously had a great relationship with Bob. I remember the spring training clip a couple of years ago. Bob came by unannounced and was in the locker room, and Freddie had some music on, merengue music or something going on, and Bob's dancing with him, you know, at 88 years young or whatever he was at the time. So just really cool to see that impact, and kind of touched a lot of the heartstrings of a lot of Brewers fans seeing Freddie Peralta respect the great, the late Bob Uecker. So that's kind of from the Brewers perspective. On the baseball perspective, two massive wins in this game. The ABS. And I'm so happy it was Dan Iasonia behind the plate, who's regarded as one of the best umpires in baseball. Not necessarily just like, oh, his strike zone's super accurate, but more about he gets it. He wants the good of the game. He has great relationship and rapport with all the players. The fact that he was the guy that said, I'll do it. Let's do the ABS. I'm in. In fact, he's the chief of the umpire union. So he's done multiple World Series. He's done multiple All-Star games. In my opinion, he's the best of the best. And he was, you know, there were a couple ABSs, but like the ABSs showed like within an inch on a lot of them. I know the first one was like very clearly in the strike zone with Tarik Skubal challenging it, but I thought it was really key that that went off without a hitch, and Dan Iasonia was a good sport about it. The second thing that was a big hit is obvious, the swing-off. That was so much fun. This game was tied after nine innings. Then we'll talk about the one thing I didn't like about the swing-off in the next segment, but Kyle Schwarber, three swings, three homers. Do y'all realize how hard that is? Just like, you know, get loose or whatever, and then you get three swings. Like, you can take pitches, obviously, but all three swings going over the fence. Freak. Can't wait to talk to him in September about his hitting. He's a free agent to be, but I thought the swing off was a massive hit. There is one thing I would change on that, and I'll explain on that in the next segment, but the Brewers, they showed out well, man. What a fun all-star week for the crew to enjoy the festivities in Atlanta. Congratulations to Atlanta. I know there's a lot of politics about why they didn't get it a couple of years ago and why they went to Colorado instead, and those politics aren't exactly solved, but nonetheless, the baseball part of it was incredible, and furthermore, the tribute to the 715th home run by Henry Aaron was incredible. Even from people that I knew that were in the ballpark said that was even cooler in the stadium than it looked on television. So kudos to everybody who planned it. I know it is impossible to plan these sort of things, and I think Atlanta crushed it, and can't wait to see what Philly has in store for next year. All right, let's talk a little bit about the fake outrage. Brief segment talking about Miz and talking about why people are actually angry. That's coming up next on a taped edition of Brewers Weekly here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Okay, let's get into it. Welcome back. I'm Dom Cotroneo. After all the reaction, after all the tempers have cooled, let's talk about Jacob Mizrowski in the All-Star Game. And again, this is a taped edition of Brewers Weekly. If you're listening live on WTMJ tonight, we're enjoying the last night of the All-Star break. Back live late tomorrow night to talk Brewers and Dodgers out west. Okay, I know five starts is not a lot. And we talked about it with Jerry Augustine when it was announced that he was going to the All-Star Game on Friday night against the Nationals. And it definitely caught everybody by surprise. But I'll repeat what I said then and what I said now. It's an entertainment product. It's an exhibition. People want to see velocity. People want to see something they've never seen before. And the All-Star Game is certainly a merit-based, objective, subjective honor that players can earn. And I'm frustrated that we've allowed All-Star Game bonuses to become a thing, and we grade Hall of Fame based on All-Star Game appearances when the fans don't always get it right. The players don't always get it right. We can still give it an honor, but not have so much weight attached to it where people act outraged when a guy who's certainly entertaining gets into the All-Star Game. But then I understand the other half of that argument. It's like, well, if nothing is sacred, what is? And that's a very fair say, like, hey, this kid hasn't earned it yet. He's only got five starts, and I'm here for that crowd. I get that. But when you look at the facts and the reality of this situation, 11 different pitchers opted out of this game, multiple of which pitched on Saturday. Like, Jacob Mizrowski technically took Matthew Boyd's spot in the All-Star game. Matthew Boyd is having a career year for the Chicago Cubs. And remember, he came over this past offseason. He was hurt most of last year. He pitched very well in the American League playoffs last year with the Cleveland Guardians. He only made 8 regular season starts, but he was great. He was struggled in 2023 with the Tigers. This, in his 11th year in the big leagues, and I'm not trying to pick on Matthew Boyd, I respect him. His 11th year in the big leagues, he gets his first All-Star game nod. What an honor, right? We should be celebrating that. Why is this guy not pitching in the game? And he can have his own reasons. Freddie Peralta didn't want to pitch in the game. You know, I can have egg on my face and understand that these things are not the same. Freddie Peralta wanted to win a game against the Nationals and be able to double up and make another start against the Dodgers the following weekend. Makes perfect sense to me. Matthew Boyd pitched on Saturday. Okay, Saturday at Yankee Stadium. 4 days later, you're telling me he can't throw an inning? And again, he's not the only one. I'm just giving the example because this is the spot that Jacob Mazurowski took. So what message does it send to the players' union and to the rest of Major League Baseball saying, here's somebody that's been 11 years in the show, has battled injuries, has had good and bad moments in his career. He's been a league average-ish crafty lefty in his career with the Tigers, then pitched okay with Detroit in its last year in 2021, then gets hurt in 2022, was not good in 2023. Tommy John comes back. Like, if there's a guy that you should be celebrating perseverance to getting into the All-Star game, it's Matthew Boyd. And the fact that he's declining the game is a red flag to me. You know, you can't go 11 deep and say everybody deserves it. Because I remind folks, fans don't vote on the pitchers. This is done by the guys in-house. Players, managers, and coaches appoint the starting pitchers and the relief pitchers to the All-Star rosters. So this outrage of, why is this guy picked? How can you do this guy? Like, you guys voted against your own guys. Like, the Phillies are the ones that have been the most vocal about it. And every teammate would want this sort of support from their own teammates. Talking about Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez. The fact is, they were both offered and they declined. So there's no leg to stand on to say that this is becoming the Savannah Bananas in the eyes of Nick Castellanos. I hope it becomes the Savannah Bananas because they're outdrawing Major League Baseball. It's an entertainment product. So we don't need to get this deep and this angry about somebody who threw an inning and touched 102 miles an hour and everybody left smiling. Okay, I think that this is going to blow over. We're going to laugh about it when Jacob Mazurowski makes 6-7 All-Star games, hopefully in the future, like his career could go. But man, like the vitriol that I was met with for having a stand and having a say from some folks of their fan bases that did not enjoy the fact that Jacob Mazurowski got in, like, talk to your players. Like, vote your guy in and then tell your players, like, you should pitch in the game because you've been appointed. This is an honor. And then there's the other people that say, well, the game doesn't count. Why should he pitch in it? The games that actually matter matter, and that's how he's going to get paid. You get $25K if you win the game, by the way. You get all expenses paid, first class, hotels. Like, you get stuff for going to the All-Star game. So I understand it's a busy day. Christian Yelich and I were talking about it. I understand it's a busy couple of days. You earned it. That's what the money is for. I'm sorry. And these guys have earned it. It's an entertainment product. And I hope Major League Baseball finds a way to tell these guys. Alex Cora and Ken Rosenthal had a great article in The Athletic reacting to all of this. And I know some folks were kind of bagging on Rosenthal about his in-game interview with Miz. Miz is that short with everybody, okay? Like, Miz is not media trained, and I'm not blaming him in the slightest. But the point being, it's a bigger problem that 11 guys are turning it down than it is that a guy that's made 5 starts is making an All-Star appearance, okay? Put your outrage to, wait, you've been selected, why don't you want to pitch in it? That's where the outrage should be, not, oh my God, they gave it to a kid after only 5 starts. Because he was electric, and I'm excited to see what the second half comes from him. So a little rant over. I think we can all calm down. Can't wait to see Jacob Mazurowski start against the Phillies maybe in September, and that would be really exciting to see and see him face Nick Castellanos for the first time. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the first half now. Let's actually talk about baseball. This is a taped edition of Brewers Weekly. Brewers, Dodgers coming up this weekend, but let's look back on the rest of the first half after this on 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back in. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers Weekly continuing here on 620 WTMJ, taped edition. So if you're joining us live mid-program, this is taped. I'm not going to be able to read your texts or your calls here tonight, but it's in the podcast feed Brewers All Access. I've got some awards I want to give out for the first half here for the Brewers. First and foremost, let's talk about the awards. Who's the first half MVP? The offensive MVP, the defensive MVP, the starting pitching Cy Young, if you will, the relief Cy Young, the Hoffman Award, if you will, the unsung hero, and the rookie of the year slash newcomer of the year for the crew. So let's just start at the very top, and I feel very convicted in this, that the team MVP should be Freddie Peralta. And you may be thinking, Dom, like, he's not, you know, he's an ace, he's been good, I don't know if he's worthy of that. No. Okay, you guys need to take a breather and actually look at his numbers so far this season and realize how great he is. A 20-game winner is an endangered species. And he's got a chance to do it. He leads all of baseball with 11 wins. And I know what you're thinking. Dom, the win is dead. You're a stats guy. How dare you talk about wins? Hey, man, go tell that to Freddie Peralta. Go tell that to any starting pitcher. I don't really care about my wins. I know Paul Skeens is probably going to win the Cy Young with maybe 8 wins by the end of the year. Freddie Peralta has given the Brewers a chance to win every single game he has pitched, all 20 of them. Okay, he has thrown 111 innings. The Brewers have been in it for all 111 innings that he has pitched. Furthermore, in those 20 games, the Brewers are 13-7 when he starts. And you may be thinking, Dom, that's not that great of a record. Well, I mean, it's better than 600. And furthermore, let me give you the run totals of the losses that Freddie Peralta has pitched in, not necessarily games that he was credited with a loss, but here are the 7 games the Brewers have lost, the run totals that the Brewers have scored as the whole game, not just during his innings. 5 runs once, and that was in 10 innings, mind you. 0, 2, 2, 2, 0. 2 zeros, 4 twos, and a 5. That's an average of 1.85 runs per game of support. And he still has an 11-4 record, a 2.66 ERA, an ERA plus of 151, meaning he's 51 points above league average. This is an ace. Enjoy it. And he's still got another year of team control. I've, you know, hitched my wagon to saying the Brewers should not trade him, nor should they trade him in the offseason. It is too team-friendly of a deal to get this kind of production for $9 million. You got to keep this guy. He is my first half MVP. Second, the offensive MVP. I came so close to giving this to Yelly. And if it was just a 2-month award, it would be Yelly. But we got to talk about Jackson Churio. Because again, I think we've become numb to the production that Jack has put forth. Jack, you know, he's got 25 doubles. He's in the top 5 in baseball in that. He's still on pace for that 70 extra base hit number that I've talked about that the legends of the game at 21 or younger have only done, like Mel Ott, like Ted Williams, like Alex Rodriguez. Like, it's an exclusive list. He's still on pace for that right now. And since that Philadelphia series, I know his on-base percentage isn't what we want it to be, but since that Philadelphia series, he's hitting 300 with an 868 OPS. 9 doubles, 2 triples, 8 homers. The dude hits it and they stay hit. They are hard hit balls. He's playing center field. That's not going to have to last much longer given Blake Perkins is on the mend and he can come back. And it could also work out for the Brewers with Sal Frelick's injury. More on that at the very end of the show. The Churio just slides back over to right field and it's no big deal. But he is easily my offensive MVP. 16 homers, second on the team as a 21-year-old. He's not done growing, guys. Like, he is going to be a superstar. Defensive MVP, shorter segment here. It's Sal Frelick. I don't understand how it could be anybody else. He's tied for second in outfield assists with 8 of them. He's plus 7 defensive runs saved in right field. That's tied second best in the National League. Now, everyone's looking up at Fernando Tatis Jr. He's been unreal in right. But him and Yaz, like, that's a really good defensive right fielder. So he's easily my pick for defensive MVP. The starting pitching, Cy Young for the Brewers in the first half. Yeah, by default, it could be Freddie. But if I want to give it to somebody else, given Freddie's already got the team MVP award, it's Jose Quintana. Guys, he's doing exactly what the Brewers thought he was going to do. 1.3 war in just 13 starts. That's B war, mind you. Yeah, he walks, guys. That's part of his game because he's not going to strike out the world. The opponent batting average on balls in play. Okay, so this takes out strikeouts and this takes out home runs. Opponent batting average on balls in play is just 274. It's the second best rate of his career. And he's not necessarily getting more ground balls. He understands that he has an elite defense behind him. He'd rather walk a guy than make a mistake. Like, look at the Ohtani at bat with the bases loaded against the Dodgers last Wednesday. Hey, I'd rather pitch around you carefully, give up a bases loaded walk, and go attack Mookie Betts. And that's exactly what he did. Give up a run, and the Brewers won the game. Would you rather give up a singular run on a walk, or give up a grand slam, or a double, basically, or double, whatever it may have been? That's savvy. That's stuff that Jose Quintana can teach to the rest of the club. Relief, Cy Young, the Hoffman Award. Honorable mention to Trevor McGill, given he was an all-star, 21 saves. I'm not, you know, discounting that in the slightest. It's Abner Uribe. Uribe's been 26 holds, most in baseball. 13 days that he's pitched on 0 days rest. Got to make sure that number doesn't get too much higher in the second half. His 11.7 strikeouts per nine is back on par with what it was when he first came up in the show back in 2023. So to see the strikeouts go with the nasty slider, get his walks under control, he ends it whenever he enters it. I think Abner's been phenomenal for the Brewers bullpen, especially for a guy. Remember, he had to miss the first four games from suspension, and the Brewers lost all four of those games. So keep that in mind as he continues to have a great, great season. All right, finally, two more. Unsung hero and the rookie of the year. The unsung hero is Isaac Collins, because hand up, I did not expect this. I don't think anybody in the media expected this. I don't think you expected this, but Isaac Collins did, because the Brewers kept churning him out there in left field, kept sending him out there. We want to find out what you got in left field. And Julio Barbon admitted it to me coming out of the spring training. Like, he needs some more work out there, but he's going to be fine. He's an infielder by trade. And he's rewarded them with a positive defender in left field, a 114 OPS plus, 14 points above league average, one of the best rookies in the game, a 751 OPS, and he's a switch hitter. Stabilizing things with Garrett Mitchell getting hurt and Blake Perkins getting hurt. Isaac Collins, I don't know where this team would be without him. He is easily my unsung hero. Finally, rookie slash newcomer of the year. This is a no-brainer. It's Caleb Durbin. Because since May 21st, 168 plate appearances, 44 games total. This is not a small sample by any stretch of the imagination. He's hitting .317 over his last 44 games with an OPS north of 800. Nearly equal walks and strikeouts. An on-base of 400 in his last 168 plate appearances. All while delivering positive defense at third, which is not a position he's super familiar with. So the Brewers scouting department, player development department, have done it once again. Man, what an incredible development story for Caleb Durbin to be a real impact piece for the Brewers at third base so far this year. Okay, that was a long segment. We're going to take a breather. We're going to talk about the keys to the second half. I got three of them. We'll go through that quickly on this taped edition of Brewers Weekly after this on 620 WTMJ.
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, we're past the halfway point of Brewers Weekly, taped edition. I'm Dom Catronio. Thanks for joining us here on 620 WTMJ. So as we get ready to start the second half, we'll talk a little bit about the draft coming up in the next segment, and then we'll preview the Dodgers series to wrap up the show. But second half overarching keys of what the Brewers need to do to be a team that either A, ideally, wins the division and potentially could be one of the best records in the game. Because mind you, right now, the Brewers are 56-40. That's a third best record in the National League. And they're not leading their division because, of course, the Cubs are 57-39, one game clear of the Crew. And they have eight games remaining head-to-head, five of them at Wrigley, three of them here in Milwaukee. That's coming up in 2 weeks' time. So not next Monday, but the Monday following, Monday through Wednesday series. But anyway, what are the three keys that the Brewers can keep charge with the Cubs as far as guys that are currently on the roster? We're not talking trade deadline stuff or anything like that here. But number one, and this is the easiest one, low-hanging fruit, William Contreras. Get him going. And he knows it. You know it. The Brewers front office knows it. Now, his catching this year, the blocking, the framing numbers don't tell the whole story, but the blocking has been phenomenal for William. I think of the blocks that he had in the seventh inning against the Dodgers. He's one of the best difficult blockers in the game. He's using his body again. Doesn't matter which knee is down. He's been phenomenal defensively, but he's here to hit. And the fact that Sal Frelick has more home runs than William Contreras at the break is like a, whoa, I mean, it's a compliment to Sal, but it's like a, hey, that those these are things that like probably weren't in the cards to the Brewers to be successful at this point in the year. But yet, second half, he's always been a second half player. In meaning his OPS goes up by over 100 points, first half versus second half for his career splits. In fact, in 600 fewer plate appearances, so essentially a full season, in 600 fewer plate appearances in the second half versus the first half, he only has 14 fewer homers. So meaning he hits home runs at a higher rate in the second half than he does in the first half. And maybe one way you help him get going, you got to DH him more. You got to give him days off more. I know Eric Haas has had a weird year at the bat compared to what he did last year. But in the long run, you need to have William Contreras available to you in the playoffs. And when you think about game three last year, him dealing with the knee, I don't want to risk that again with the finger where it's like he's burnt out in September and the finger's really throbbing by playoff time and he has to not catch a game. That's something I worry about coming up playoff time. But let's make sure the Brewers get William going and they'll be in really good shape. Second key, be smart with the rotation. So you've got Nestor Cortez Jr. coming back soon, probably in the next 2 weeks. Then that becomes a logjam of what do you actually do? Do you keep a six-man rotation? Do you make a trade? All these things are on the table. But piggybacks are certainly on the table like we've seen with Quinn Priester. And using this sort of, you know, if you're going to have a shorter bullpen, you need to only get through games where you only use two or three pitchers, period. Like that just needs to happen. And maybe that sounds like you're punting on a couple of games, but the truth is you need to be able to do that to save your arms, because if you're in a six-man rotation, that's one less guy in your bullpen. And the way the Brewers use their bullpen, it's very important for them to keep those arms fresh. Extra days of rest for Jose Quintana, for Brandon Woodruff, for Jacob Mizorowski, given you are going to hit that innings limit the Brewers have warned they're going to. And I think they'd rather save innings in the regular season to use them, hopefully, in October for the guys like Jacob Mizorowski to avoid a Steven Strasburg-type situation when the Nats shut him down. I believe that was 2017, if I'm not mistaken, 2016 maybe, and said, hey, he's done. He's not pitching. And we all know how that ended for them. But the good news for the Brewers, you know, as they return to play next week, they actually have each of the next four consecutive Thursdays off. So they can get creative with their rotation, with their bullpen, using these off days to their advantage. Then they have that long stretch where they're going to play 18 games in 17 days with the doubleheader. So be smart with your rest there. Then finally, the third piece, maybe another reliever. This is a small bit of trade deadline talk, but Rob Sestrizny threw a flat ground the other day. I look at lefties. The Brewers need a situational lefty that can ease the burden on Jared Canning. That's what Rob Sestrizny was doing before he had this rib issue pop up on him. But I really feel like I'm not going to make my prediction today. We'll talk about it in next week's Brewers Weekly as our trade deadline show. I've got a guest lined up for that I'm really excited to share with you. But I think the Brewers are going to make a similar Nick Mears-esque deal where it's under the radar. It's like, wait, why would they get another bullpen arm? Because I think they need somebody else to get lefties out specifically. And there's a few guys like that on the market. We'll talk about that in next week's show. But if I had to pick one thing that I know the Brewers are going to do, because everyone's going to go for a third baseman, everybody's going to go for power. Like that's a no-brainer. But I know the Brewers are going to add a reliever because that's what they do every single year. Those are my keys for the second half. You need another lefty to handle those situational spots to ease the load on Koenig. You need to be smart with your rotation, and you need to get William Contreras going. I think it's pretty simple, pretty fair numbers there for the crew. All right, let's hear from some of the newest Brewers into their farm system. We're going to hear some audio from Andrew Fisher and Brady Ebel coming up next on a taped edition of Brewers Weekly 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Taped edition of Brewers Weekly. I'm Dom Catronio. Real tight segment. Less of me, more of the guys the Brewers drafted, and we'll give you a quick peek at who you should be keeping an eye on for the Brewers once we come to signability time for the crew. Their first pick, the 20th overall pick, was Andrew Fisher, listed as a third baseman out of the University of Tennessee. Three schools in 3 years might sound like a red flag, right? You went Duke as a freshman, then he transferred to Ole Miss, then he transferred to Tennessee. Let me give let him explain why he went to three different schools.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a tough time with recruiting during COVID. Really wasn't sure where I was going to go, what that looked like. I wasn't like a top national recruit or anything, so the recruiting process didn't happen for me, you know, in eighth grade. Mine happened that sophomore summer going into junior year, committed to Duke. My family has an academic background, so that's really the, you know, the push there. My mom, she works at Princeton. My dad being a school teacher, they push academics. So that was what guided that decision. Played my year out at Duke. Obviously, it went well for me, but obviously the best conference is the SEC, and it's not negotiable. You're talking about the best of the best. Every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, whoever you're facing, I mean, you're getting a first rounder, second rounder, and then the whole entire bullpen's getting drafted. So you're facing big leaguers half the time. So it was a no-brainer for me to go play in the SEC. Ole Miss just happened to be my first visit, and just the way it worked out, it made sense for me in that time. And then from there, I mean, how could you not want to play for Coach Vitello? A guy, he just won the national championship the year before. I mean, he's got every single one of his players' backs. It's remarkable what that guy does. So once I was back in the portal, another no-brainer for me.
Furthermore, he also explained, so he mostly played first base with Tennessee, but the Brewers listed him at third base, trying to give him a shot there. His explanation as to why first base with the Volunteers, and then why, you know, he's fine at third.
I've always seen myself as a third baseman. So whether they listed me as a third baseman or a first baseman or second baseman or an outfielder or whatever, I was going to go in there and compete at whatever spot they put me. And if they want me to play third, I'll play third. Obviously, if it's somewhere else, it's somewhere else. But I just want to win. So whatever that looks like, however I can get to the show the fastest and make an impact right away, I want to win. So whatever that looks like, I'm willing to do.
So really excited for Fisher to join this club. 6'1", 210. That slot value is $4.27 mil. Next up, Brady Ebel, the son of Dino Ebel, third base coach of the Dodgers. He had a funny clip about, hey, we just saw the Brewers sweep the Dodgers, and you know, a week ago he was down in the dumps about the Brewers, and now...
Yeah, I really haven't even thought about that. Like, now that you say that, I'm a huge Brewer fan. You know, I'm rooting for them the rest of the season, and hopefully they beat the Dodgers in the playoffs. You never know, so we'll see. But my dad's over there. I'm always rooting for my dad, so let's see what happens, yeah.
So that was fun. And he's somebody that, you know, his dad has a great reputation in the game. He's been in it for a very long time. He has seen the best of the best, and, you know, he's got the chance to grow up in a big league clubhouse.
Yeah, ever since I can remember, I grew up in a big league clubhouse, super blessed to go to the stadium, Angel Stadium, and now Dodger Stadium, and it's been huge. I've been able to see the superstars, Mike Trout, Pujols, Ohtani, Freeman, Schultz, like, can name a lot of players, and just to see the way they go about it and train and how they take every day so serious because they're preparing to, you know, be great, and them guys don't take days off, and just seeing them walk through the clubhouse and talking to these guys and asking them questions has helped me and my brother out a lot. So it's been huge. And, you know, now it's my turn to start my career and hopefully play against these guys that I know. So I'm excited for that. Yeah.
And then finally, you know, he was part of that epic Corona High School team down in Southern California that had four players drafted in the first couple of rounds. Epic team. He is a shortstop by trade, even though he played third base on that team. So excited to see him. Now, lastly, a couple of names to keep an eye out for as the Brewers, they always are smart with their bonus money and how they distribute it throughout the rest of the draft. The three names I want to point out were all in a row. 12th round, 13th round, 14th round. Two high school picks, Cooper Underwood, who's a lefty pitcher. Gavin Lauritsen, I hope I'm saying that right. He's from Southern California, Foothill, California, high school pick. And then Brendan Brock, a JUCO pick from Southwestern Illinois College. If you hear about the Brewers fleecing again, like it was like, how do they have bonus money available for the 12th, 13th, 14th round? This is what they do. These are the guys that it's going to go to, and we'll find out here in the next week and a half once the signing deadline arrives. So that's going to do it for the little draft segment. Running out of time, let's talk a little bit about the Dodgers and the break as the Brewers get ready to go for the second half after this, 620 WTMJ.
It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All All right, I got about 2 minutes left to get you set for the Dodgers series this week. First and foremost, let's talk about Sal Frelick and his hamstring strain. It's his left hamstring. He suffered it on Sunday before the break. His MRI revealed a grade one strain. The Brewers have not placed him on the IL yet. They don't have to until tomorrow. They can retroactively put 3 days back on him, and maybe they feel it'll be the minimum 10 days. And if it starts on Monday, that means he could be back when they return home next Friday against the Marlins. So that's a tough blow to have, but also it's a hamstring. You want to take your time with those. So we'll find out more on that tomorrow. Next up, a couple of roster moves you might have missed right after the game on Sunday. Drew Avens was designated for assignment briefly, had a cup of coffee in the show this year, because Blake Perkins returned from his rehab assignment but was technically optioned to AAA Nashville. So his rehab assignment is technically over, but he's active and good to go when the Brewers want to bring him back up. And essentially, yes, they've optioned him, but he's going to spend fewer than 20 days in the minor leagues, I imagine. So it's not technically burning an option year for Blake Perkins, which means Blake could be with the team this weekend, given there's both a 40-man spot open and now an active spot open if it's going to be Sal Frelick going on the IL. Furthermore, the rotation coming up against the Dodgers this week, Quinn Priester will start on normal rest. Maybe they use the opener, maybe they don't. We'll find that out tomorrow. He goes tomorrow. Freddy Peralta will go on Saturday, and then Jose Quintana will finish things out and go on Sunday for the crew. And we got some late-night baseball coming up for you this week, so get your coffee ready. We'll be with you in the podcast feed as well. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcast. First pitch for Friday night is 9:10 p.m. Central Time. We still will have a show after that. It'll be 8:10 on Saturday and then 3:10 on Sunday. That is going to do it for us tonight. My thanks to our producer, Brian Kelly. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll see you for the second half. Keep on swinging.